Israel, Amin Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generation. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program comes to you from Chicago, Illinois. It is entitled Mr. Flanagan, the Chaplain, and Mr. Lincoln, and is presented in celebration of Lincoln's birthday. The script was written by Mark Siegel.
He was Father Abraham to many, and Mr. President to some. He was Honest Abe and the Great Emancipator. He was the Commander-in-Chief and the Common Man Transfigured, and just old Abe Lincoln. But of all the thousand roles he played, his greatest was as interpreter of the Democratic faith, and his words probed deeply to the heart and meaning of that faith.
What constitutes the bulwark of our liberty and independence? Our reliance is in love of liberty, which God has planted in our bosoms. Our defense is in the preservation of the spirit which prizes liberty as the heritage of all men in all lands, everywhere.
He could say it so that the words rang with beauty and authority. And he could say it so simply that no man could fail to understand.
In relation to the principle that all men are created equal, let it be as nearly reached as we can.
This is a story of the time of Abraham Lincoln, the story of a battle fought during the Civil War. It was a bloodless battle, fought without the roar of muzzle-loading cannon or the strains of martial trumpets. Yet, it was a battle as important for Americans as any major encounter in the war between the states. For this battle, like the larger struggle, was waged to maintain the democratic faith and its greatest principle, equality among men. The story begins in an army camp in the summer of 1861, a camp in Northern Virginia, where volunteers of the 65th Regiment of the 5th Pennsylvania Cavalry drilled in preparation for action still to come.
All right, fight! Fire! All right, fight! Fire! Company! Halt! Company! Dismiss!
Corporal Miller.
Oh, no, Flanagan, not again. I told you already.
Now, not to be put off again, Corporal. With my wife, Katie, lying there sick, not a soul within the sound of her
Flanagan,
voice.
Flanagan, you're wasting your breath. I don't have the authority.
It's not your authority I'm asking. It's permission to see the colonel. No, it's not an obstreperous
man
I am.
For the fourth time, Flanagan, I'll tell you the orders. The regiment's on call.
And there be no furloughs. I know. I've heard the words. But this is an emergency, man. It's not a picnic I'm asking to be going
Flanagan,
on.
Flanagan, I take my orders.
And the colonel won't see me?
He'll see no one who wants to ask for a furlough.
Ah, then you leave me no alternative, Corporal. No alternative at all. Dear, it breaks my heart. Never in my life would I thought I'd be doing this to Abraham Lincoln.
Doing what, Flanagan? What in harbor are you muttering about?
Deserting, man. That's what's in my mind.
Flanagan, do you know what you're saying?
By nightfall, I'll be a filthy deserter.
You'd take the chance?
Miller, you're a young one, and it's not for you to understand. The letter says Katie's sick. Mortally sick. And if the good colonel won't see me...
Wait, Flanagan. I've got an idea.
An idea?
If the colonel knew the circumstances...
You'll tell him?
Well, no, I can't tell him, Flanagan.
I might have known.
But we've got a chaplain now. He's just been appointed.
The chaplain? The new chaplain? Oh, now it's thick-headed you are, Patrick Flanagan, for not thinking of the new chaplain.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind it can be arranged, Private Flanagan.
And how am I to thank you, chaplain? How the stone you've lifted off my heart.
It's my job to help. But I'm counting on you to keep your word.
To be back once I've seen Katie? I'll fly like the wind.
I'll see about the pass now, Flanagan. But one word of advice.
Whatever you say, chaplain.
Go directly to your home and spend the full time there. Then come directly back.
There's just one other errand I'd be doing, chaplain.
One other errand?
When I reach Philadelphia, I'll just be running over to the church.
Good, Flanagan.
And I'll be lighting a candle for you, for the good man you are.
Thanks, but it's hardly necessary.
And I'll be telling our priest what a fine Irish chaplain we have in the Cameron's Dragoons.
That wouldn't be quite correct, Flanagan.
Not correct, chaplain?
I'm not Irish.
Oh, with the name of Michael Allen? Not Irish?
No, not Irish.
Ah, then, you're a minister, not a priest.
No, Flanagan, I'm neither.
Neither? But I don't...
I'm of the Jewish faith, like most of the volunteers in this regiment.
So it's Jewish you are. Well, no matter. It's the heart of an Irishman you have.
For the first 3 months after he became regimental chaplain, Michael Allen of Philadelphia was assured on several occasions that he had the heart of many national origins. He accepted the confidence with which he was received by all 1,200 men of Cameron's Dragoons as a sign of fundamental brotherhood, and undertook his duties conscientiously. Although he had never been ordained as a rabbi, he ministered to the spiritual and welfare needs of the men with sensitivity and concern, and looked forward to service with the regiment until the war's end. Then, on a day in September 1861... he was summoned to the office of the regimental commander, Colonel Max Friedman.
Chaplain Allen, reporting to Colonel Friedman as directed, sir.
At ease, Chaplain. Pull a chair up, Michael. We can dispense with the formalities today.
All right, Max. Max, you seem troubled.
I am troubled, Michael. It's this dispatch. It arrived this morning.
Orders to move?
No, Michael. The dispatch concerns you.
Me? I don't understand.
Listen. From the Assistant Adjutant General of the Army. Any person mustered into service as chaplain, that applies to you, of course.
Of course.
Any person mustered into service as chaplain who is not a regularly ordained clergyman of a Christian denomination will be at once discharged without pay or allowance.
What?
That's what it says, Michael. Look for yourself.
That disqualifies me on two counts, Max. I'm neither Christian nor regularly ordained.
That doesn't mean you're ineffective in your work, Michael.
Thank you, Max. The order doesn't give you any alternative, does it?
None at all. It's a poor reward for your devotion.
I'm not concerned about myself, Max.
If you're concerned about the effect on the men, you're right, Michael. They need you here. They've come to depend on you.
That does concern me. But it's more than that. Much more. I don't understand this order. It's a violation of the Constitution's guarantee of religious liberty.
A clear violation, but nonetheless an order.
But, by what authority does the Adjutant General write it?
I've gone into that too, Michael. The Congress passed a law in June.
A law which prevents a regiment with more than half of its men of the Jewish faith from having a Jewish chaplain? I don't believe it.
That's the law, Michael. We didn't know about it, of course, when we elected you, but fair or unfair, that's the law. The question is, what do we do about it?
Chaplain Michael Allen turned the question over in his mind. One point was immediately clear.
What happens to me is unimportant. There's a principle at stake. The principle of equality.
A second point was clear to the chaplain, too.
This law must be removed from the statute books.
But how to go about it remained unclear. As for his own immediate future, he was aware that he had no choice.
In here, Flanagan.
Oh, now, and it's there you are. I've been looking for you from one end of the camp to the other.
Well, Flanagan, how's Katie?
That's what they came to be telling you, Chaplain. She's fine, fine.
That makes me very happy.
Oh, what is it you think you're doing there, Chaplain?
Packing, just packing a crate.
No, I'm not a critical man, Chaplain. But if you lend me that hammer...
You're right, Flanagan. I'm not much of a carpenter. Here it is.
Now, I hope you'll take no offense, Chaplain, but I think we'll start over on this board.
No offense, Flanagan.
There. Now the nails, Chaplain. I gave up a good job to come into the army. I used to support Katie and myself doing just this. That's a firm, sound crate now. You could send that one from here to Killarney without a fear.
Yes, it's a good job you've done. Thanks.
You're welcome. And any time you need a crate done up...
Thanks, Flanagan. Thanks again. But I won't be needing any more crates put together, I'm afraid.
How's that, Chaplain? No more crates?
No, all of my gear is in that crate. I'm leaving.
Ah, but you will be back.
No, I'm resigning. Or, rather, I'm being forced to resign.
Forced to resign? Who's forcing you to resign? Just let me know the name of the blackguard and Patrick Flanagan.
No, no, Flanagan. It's an order.
An order that says the best chaplain a regiment ever had must leave? I'm not a clever man, Chaplain, but there's little sense in what you're saying.
It's a complicated business, Flanagan.
Complicated, is it? Senseless, that's what it is.
Perhaps you're right. But what it comes to is that I can't continue as chaplain.
Because you're not a clergyman?
Because I'm not a clergyman. And because I'm a Jew.
Are you standing there, Chaplain, and telling me that even if you were a clergyman, they wouldn't let you comfort the men because you're a Jew?
That's right.
Well, by all that's holy, that's unfair.
Yes, it is.
Well, perhaps now then, that being the case, perhaps all the Jewish soldiers in the regiment should turn in their muskets because they're Jewish.
No, that's not quite the answer, Flanagan.
Maybe it's not the answer, Chaplain. But there's not a man in the regiment won't be down in the mouth to learn you're leaving.
They'll get over it.
Maybe they will, and maybe they won't. But there'll be a question tickling the mind of every one of them.
A question? What question?
They'll all be asking themselves, if we're fighting this war because all men are created equal, how is it all chaplains aren't created equal?
Flanagan, you have rare insight. And I'll tell you, man to man, I've been asking myself that very question over and over since yesterday. Flanagan, you've said goodbye four times in the last hour. What brings you back again?
I'm a bulldog of a man, Chaplain. And there's something I still want to know.
If I can answer it, I will.
Then who is it with the nerve to say you can't be the regimental chaplain?
The War Department, Flanagan. The Secretary of War.
Mr. Cameron? The very one in whose honor this regiment was formed?
Yes, now that you mention it, the very one.
Well, then, I've made up my mind.
You have?
That I have. I'd not pack and go, Michael Allen.
You wouldn't?
That I would not. I'd go to that very Mr. Cameron's office in Washington, D.C., I would. And I'd stomp and holler till he heard me. That's what I'd be doing.
Oh, Flanagan, I can't go to Secretary Cameron's office and stomp and holler.
Why not?
The circumstances don't allow it. But you've given me an idea. So I thank you, Flanagan.
Oh, now, sure, and it's nothing at all, Chaplain. Nothing at all.
Michael Allen consulted with his colonel and the other officers of Cameron's Dragoons before he left the regiment, and a decision was reached, a decision based in part on the simple advice of one Patrick Flanagan. A few weeks later, a small committee was ushered into the office of the Secretary of War, Mr. Simon Cameron.
Mr. Secretary, may I introduce myself? I'm Colonel Max Friedman, commanding officer of the regiment named in your honor.
I'm delighted to meet you, Colonel.
And this is Rabbi Arnold Fischel of New York.
How do you do, Rabbi? Won't you please be seated?
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you.
And what can I do for you, Colonel?
Sir, the officers of the regiment have designated Rabbi Fischel as regimental chaplain to succeed Mr. Michael Allen, who has recently resigned as our chaplain.
I see.
We've come here today to ask your approval of Rabbi Fischel's appointment.
I understand, Colonel.
Then we may count on your approval of our application?
Colonel Friedman, I find this a painful position.
Not more painful, sir, than the men in my command who are denied equality of religious practice.
But I ask you, and you, Rabbi Fischel, to understand my position. I share your indignation with the law passed by Congress.
We're happy to know that, Mr. Secretary.
But I did not dictate the law, and I have no choice but to obey it.
There is a question of interpretation, Mr. Secretary. It would be possible for you to right a great wrong by interpreting the law to include regularly ordained clergymen of any faith.
Rabbi Fischel, I must execute the law as it's written.
Then you will not approve Rabbi Fischel as chaplain of the Cameron's Dragoons, sir?
It's not that I will not, Colonel. It's that I cannot.
Mr. Secretary, it is not only Jewish soldiers who suffer by this arbitrary act of Congress. While this law remains on the statute books, the right of any American to the free practice of his religion is threatened. Can any man be free when his brother is not free?
No. No, the war itself is an answer to that question, is it not?
It is, sir. And because we recognize that this question is a question of equality for all Americans, we will fight this law, Secretary Cameron, as vigorously as we know how.
Rabbi, Colonel, I share your view in the matter. If I can help, I hope you'll call on me. I pray your efforts will be blessed with success. That is all I can say.
There was no longer a question of the interpretation of the law. The right of Jewish chaplaincy had been denied. By the same token, the right of religious ministrations for all minority groups had been denied. Colonel Friedman and his officers estimated the situation as if it were a military problem and sought the tactical solutions to that problem.
Then we are agreed. Our first step will be to let the country know of this threat to religious liberty. We shall begin by writing letters to Jewish periodicals throughout the country advising them of the facts of the situation.
The letter-writing campaign was begun. First, the Jewish periodicals picked up the cause. Soon the great metropolitan dailies were editorializing for revision of the volunteer bill which restricted the right of chaplaincy.
Gentlemen, I have received a letter from Rabbi Isaac Meir Wise suggesting that a petition campaign be undertaken throughout the country to right the wrongs inherent.
Petitions for a change in the law flooded Washington. But in the pressure of wartime business, the Congress still took no action. Then one day in December, Rabbi Fischel arrived to see Colonel Friedman. Guarding the colonel's tent was one Private Patrick Flanagan.
Is the colonel in, Private?
That he is, sir. It's Rabbi Fischel you are, is it not, sir?
Yes, I'm Rabbi Fischel.
Rabbi Fischel, would you be forgiven my impertinence if I asked you a question?
Go right ahead.
Well then, sir, have you had any word of that good lad that was our chaplain, that fine lad, Michael Allen?
Why, yes, he's in Philadelphia.
Is he just sitting there in my own city, suffering under the blight of this law that won't let him serve his country?
Why, no, he's fighting with a lot of other people to help get a new law passed.
Well, now, I'm tickled to hear that. And are you among them?
Yes, I am.
Then may I give you a private advice, Rabbi?
Go right ahead, Private.
Well, it's in my mind, Rabbi, that old Abe Lincoln would never be standing for these shenanigans.
That's in my mind, too.
And if I had the time, which I don't, I'd be telling the president about the injustice of it all. That's the thing I'd be doing.
What did you say your name was?
I didn't, sir. But it's Flanagan. Patrick Flanagan.
Well, Patrick Flanagan, the same thing's in my mind, too. And it's just that I've come to tell your colonel.
Rabbi Fischel had been asked by the Board of American Israelites to go to Washington as a representative of the American Jewish community. Like Patrick Flanagan, the rabbi was certain that Mr. Lincoln would stand for a reaffirmation of equal rights.
if an audience could be secured. On the fourth attempt, Rabbi Fischel was granted the interview he had so urgently sought.
Pull up a chair, Dr. Fischel.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Oh, a little closer to the hearth, Dr. Fischel. This office is colder than an Indiana barn in January, and the fire isn't much.
The warmth of your hospitality more than makes up for it, Mr. President.
Well, it's kind of you to say so, Dr. Fischel. Now, this matter that brings you here.
Yes, Mr. President.
I'm grateful to you for calling it to my notice. I've read the documents you left with Mr. Hay.
I hope you've reached a conclusion favorable to our petition, Mr. Lincoln.
Dr. Fischel, I could not reach any other conclusion. I believe a wrong has been done, both to the constitutional rights of your co-religionists and the welfare of the Jewish volunteers.
Mr. President, I want you to know that I am here not only to urge that that wrong be righted, but because this law violates the principle of religious liberty for Americans of all faiths, not only my own.
Dr. Fischel, that is where our strength lies. That each group of Americans must defend its own rights, knowing that in doing so, it defends the rights of all other Americans. I believe the exclusion of Jewish chaplains to have been altogether unintentional on the part of Congress.
I agree, sir.
But you and your co-religionists have rightly seen the implications. Something must be done to meet this case. I give you my promise that it will be done.
In December of 1861, Abraham Lincoln addressed a request to the Committee on Military Affairs of the House of Representatives for a revision of the volunteer bill, which included the regulations on military chaplaincy. 6 months later, in the Congress of the United States...
Gentlemen, the bill before the House to amend the chaplaincy law to allow Protestant ministers, Catholic priests, and Jewish rabbis to serve as chaplains in the armed forces of the United States has been carried.
Battle won. A battle in the never-ending struggle to reaffirm and strengthen the principle of equality among men. A battle to be remembered on Lincoln's birthday, along with Gettysburg and Shiloh, Antietam and Appomattox. A battle which goes forward today, as it did in the time of Mr. Flanagan, the chaplain, and Mr. Lincoln, with the inspiration of old Abe's simple testament.
In relation to the principle that all men are created equal, let it be as nearly reached as we can.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting the Honorable Henry L. Berman, Justice of the Superior Court of Cook County, Illinois, and Honorary Chairman of the Board of the Chicago Israel Volunteer Group, Mr. Berman.
The battle won in the House of Representatives that day in 1862... was not one with guns, cannon, or powder. Yet in the history of our nation, it was more important than the guns at Gettysburg or Shiloh. It was another kind of battle in the never-ending struggle to reaffirm and strengthen the principle that all men are created equal. For of what value is freedom and equality of men, as written in our Constitution, and one on our fighting fronts, if it is not preserved in every law of our nation? The core of our freedom abides in our laws. The strength of these laws lies in their interpretation and just administration. We have all often heard the sentence from the historic American faith which Congress made official on July 4, 1776, that man is not made for the state, but the state for man, and it deserves its just powers only from the consent of the governed. Abraham Lincoln readily realized that the exclusion of rabbis from the chaplaincy of our armed forces was unintentional on the part of Congress. Yet, however unintentional it may have been, it deprived a group of its constitutional rights and violated the principle of religious liberty for Americans of all faiths. In defending their own rights, therefore, the group defended the rights of all other Americans. Today, as in 1862, as always, we must defend our individual rights and preserve our freedom through the guarding of our laws, that every law be sound, just, and in accordance with our constitutional rights. In February, as we honor the birthday of Abraham Lincoln, it is well for us to remember our individual responsibility to those laws and the men who interpret and administer them, to the end that government of the people, by the people and for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Thank you, Judge Berman. Our eternal light drama today, Mr. Flanagan, the Chaplain, and Mr. Lincoln, was written by Mark Siegel and comes to you from Chicago, Illinois. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. The music was written by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Bernard Berquist. Presented in the cast were Maurice Copeland, Jack Lester, Marshall Kent, Harry Elders, Norman Gottschalk, Everett Clark, James Andelin, and Ned Locke. This has been an NBC Radio Network production directed by Howard Keegan. Dr. Ben Zion Boxer, rabbi of the Forest Hills Jewish Center, is program editor. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is Monitor, the NBC Weekend Radio Service.